Folks, my name's Gary and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
It's just fantastic walking into a room full of friends. I know most of you, but even those I don't know, because we have this bond, this AA bond, you're still my friend. You know? And even though I have never met you, I love you. I love you in that pure, clear, uncluttered way that we come to love each other in Alcoholics Anonymous through the power of this fellowship. And this fellowship has been the most incredible power in my life. No question about it. It is the most important thing in my life. It has been for 4 decades now, and it will remain so until my final breath. When Peter contacted me about speaking tonight, he mentioned that I might want to have a look at the holistic business of recovery. And thinking about it, I like the idea of the dividends of AA. The dividends that I have reaped over the years. Right, you get your dividends from the stock exchange, but that's piddly compared to the dividends that we reap from AA. If we stick around, if we take this program to heart, if we do not mess with the program, if we do not try and overanalyze the program, if we do not think we can cherry pick out of the program to make an easier, softer way for ourselves, it just doesn't work. When I came out of the depths of the hell of alcoholism, and I mean, I was fortunate. My father had been in AA many, many years before I walked in. So I was aware that this thing could work. But the lunacy of the practicing alcoholic precluded me from taking advantage of it until I was dying. And that was at the tender age of 27, 28. And when I think of the dividends that I've gotten out of this program, the first word that comes to mind, and I noted we had two newish guys in the room tonight, the first word that comes to mind is freedom. Freedom from this hell that I was in. Freedom from this substance that had me in its grip, that had me in an evil grip, that was actually destroying me in every single way possible. Not the least of which was spiritual, never mind the physical. I had gotten to the point where I was throwing alcoholic seizures, those epileptic type fits that we have at the end of it all. More than one a day. I was bleeding inside. I didn't know where the stuff was coming from. All I knew was that I was peeing and pooping the stuff. And I was hallucinating. I was having the horrors. I kid you not, I'd be talking to somebody and in front of my eyes, part of my brain that had been totally overwhelmed by the stuff would have these people turning into monsters in front of me. And the little bit of sanity that I had left would be telling me, don't let this bloke know that he's turning into a monster. That was right towards the end. When I had to face the inevitability. And because I was such a stubborn,
self-centered, arrogant arsehole, I have to get to death's door. We don't have to get to death's door. We had a member in Central Africa in my one home group there who'd never had more than 4 beers in any one session. He decided that that kind of consumption for him made his life unmanageable. That was good enough. AA tells us that the only desire, the only juice for membership is a desire to get sober, to stay sober, to enjoy the benefits of this thing. Where in God's name can you find another situation, another institution that will save your life, bring you back from the precipice, deliver all the dividends for nothing? For nothing. It's not going to happen. Never has happened, won't happen in the future. It's only happened with this program. So it delivered to me this incredible thing called freedom, that I wasn't dictated to every waking moment of my life, dedicated to securing my next drink. And then securing, before I went into my nightly coma, the amount that I'd need the next morning to stop me from shaking, to stop my eyeballs from doing the tricks. Because those days, I was a journalist, and we lived on the telephones, and we had those old phones where you had to put your finger in a hole. And first thing in the morning, I couldn't hit the hole. I was shaking so much. So I would need to drink a bottle of vodka before I went to work. The trouble was, I had this paranoid fear that I would drop the bottle or lose it. So I started buying 4 nips, 4 quarter bottles. And this became very complex now. Because at night I'd write myself notes, telling me where I'd hidden the stuff. And then there was the fear of losing the note, which I did once. And then you write another note to tell you where this note is, which will then tell you where your stash is in the morning. And it got to ridiculous. And you know, as journalists in those days, there was no recognition of alcoholism in Africa, man. You were a wee shithead. You were a drunk. It's all under the carpet. Boom, finished. We had to drink on the sneak when it was too excess. I'd gotten reduced to the point where we were injecting the shit in vodka into oranges, taking them into the office. This is before I was fired and became unemployable, and sitting there and peeling the oranges and eating them. But there was a problem. Too much of the vodka got into the white pus of the orange peel. So I ate the peel as well. And then as we declined, as it became worse and worse and worse, and I was on the road, and I was a bum, a hobo, a tramp, whatever you call it, Jane Austen, I did have my standards, I have to say. I lived under bridges. I preferred bridges because it meant I had a roof over my head. I'm a Taurean. I like security. If there wasn't bridges, I would hit the park bench, but very reluctantly. And it was from under the bridges and on the park benches that I would sit and judge other people for being arseholes for going to work. Such is the lunacy of alcoholism. But I went down, you know, it was started on beer, went to the hard stuff, was unemployable, no money, went to the real hard stuff, the metho, so on. But in South Africa they dyed all the metho blue. And the urban legend was that that glue was poison to stop us from drinking it. So we got onto this idea of running it through a half a loaf of bread. Catching it there, most of the glue stayed in the bread. So you drank the stuff that came out. Then we got hungry enough, we ate the bloody bread anyway. I ended up on a brand of aftershave that came from India. It was green, but dirt cheap. I couldn't keep anything else down. I was vomiting it up with the blood. It would mix with the blood and come up. I got hold of this bloody stuff. It was dirt cheap, but it was terrible. You had to hang on here and just push it down. You know? And that was to bring myself down. And as I say, it got to the point where they walked in there, and it was that classic thing with a guy in a white coat and a stethoscope, you know, and I'm lying there all piped up. I used to pull these things out and walk out, but this time I couldn't. I was buggered. And he just stood there and he said to me, "Look, mate," they don't say mate in Africa, they say, "Mister, whatever, you're going to die. You're going to die in days if this carries on." And I lay there that night and I had that decision that this idiot needed. Did I want to live or did I want to die? And of course I chose to live. And I had the example of my father and these other incredible old boys. The answer was in AA. When I staggered into AA, and I was presented with this book and this program, I have never, ever questioned anything in that book. Nothing. It's worked in its form for too many people for nearly 80 years now, eh? It's worked for too many people. Why must I sit there and use the little bit of brain I've got left to try and analyze something or fix something that's not broke? It's working. My father's a miracle. All his mates are miracles. Now I must come in here, the arrogant me, and start analysing this thing, questioning it, for God's sake. I just accepted it like that. That's how desperate I was. Everything. And I went at it like you can't believe. Because of that, I was blessed with the good fortune never to bust. But I can understand people busting. My dad used to say, "Boy, don't judge." And I don't. I used to then, when I was new in AA. I said, "Why do these people keep on being busted? What's going on? What is the problem?" My old man used to say, "Don't judge, mate." He said, "This fellowship is like a slow bus. And it's slow on purpose. It's so those people who fall off can get back on again. That it doesn't bugger off and leave them." So judgmentalism was out. Of course, you hear something, you know, it's just that human instinct, a little bit of scandal, didn't pick up on it, whatever. That's fine, but I try not to judge. Because there, but for the grace of God, go I. Had I not been as fortunate as I was? So we come back to dividends. Let me tell you about a few of the other dividends. So I got this freedom. I'd overcome this incredible fear. What am I going to do with time? If I'm not drinking, how can you live without alcohol? That was my biggest fear. But when I sat and tried to pinpoint it, there was absolutely no reason for it. So therefore, that was still insane thinking. Because there's no doubt I was insane. I mean, I was very sort of diplomatically called a nervous disorders institution. The bloody loony bin. But because it was voluntary, my mother was putting too much pressure on me. I could walk out, which of course I could. And And I still have fear. You know, I'll be sitting there and I'll have a bit of an attack or something. I'll say to myself, now what the hell's going on with you? And I have these conversations. Just like I have conversations with God. I don't pray. I talk to the God of my understanding. Praying is too mechanical. I have conversations with the boss. But then when I have these anxiety feelings, I say, what's the matter with you? Look at yourself. What are the reasons for this? And you know what? I can't find reason. But after all these years, I'm strong enough in this and that to handle that shit. My wife gives me a hard time. I'm strong enough to handle that shit instead of doing what I used to do. Just go off the bloody deep end and go and get pissed again. No? So dividends, I've got my health. I've got my family. I've got my wife and my girls back. Unbelievable. I ran away. I deserted them. She divorced me. And I said to her, you were a coward. You know what my reason was? I said, listen, I'm leaving. I don't want the girls to see me die. What a cowardly bullshitter. Eh? All I wanted to do was get away from the responsibility of family. Classic alcoholic. And I did. I did it geographical, but I didn't do it to another town. I did it to another country. And truth God, the only things that changed were the labels on the bottles. Because I was exactly the bloody same. The problem was me. Not the alcohol. The problem was me. That was the platform that exploited my problems. I got happiness. That elusive thing that we all strive for when we're drinking. You know? Today I strive for serenity. Hey, that's up there, man. And you know what? I get it sometimes. I got wealth. I got two forms of wealth. Because I've got my mind back and I was able to exercise my talent. I got the wealth that makes pills jingle. Money. But much, much more important, man, was the wealth of these other meaningful things in life, like the love of my daughters, like the respect of my peers in my industry, journalism at that stage. Bunch of cynical bastards, if ever you had one. You know. I got goodwill. I got respect. I got back the dignity that I have lost as a result of what happened to me, becoming a bum. You know, at the height of it, I was still arrogant enough to think that every newspaper in the southern hemisphere of Africa was actually desperate for my services. Despite the fact that little equivalent of county newspapers like the Gympie Times wouldn't let me in the front door. But when I came back, sober, and when I was given the opportunity to prove myself, like I took off like there was no sky limit. Because there was no booze. I just worked and I used my talents. And I've seen countless people in AA do the same thing. And I had to be very, very careful because with success comes a tendency with some of us, like me, to think, hey, we got the better of this again. You know? Well, hey, I must be cured now. Jesus Christ, bloody 15 years. Shit, I must be cured now. Luckily, because of the experience, because of this program, because of the meetings I've gone to. I'm sitting in one meeting, a bloke walks in the back there, I waved to him, I think I was chairing the meeting. I hadn't seen him for a while. He was 22 years sober. When I give him an opportunity to speak, he stands with his head bowed, he says, guys, he says, I've just come off a bus. 22 years sober. I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, what the hell? I mean, isn't that a wake-up call? You know? And it enabled me to come to Aussie. You know? My forebears come from Ballarat, that area down there where the criminals were. They were criminals. Females. We were criminal on the female side. I was sober. I was successful. I was able to convince the authorities with the handing over of a lot of money that I would make a good Aussie. And they believed me. We came over here and I've got incredible new friends and a fellowship here which is magnificent in its diversity, you know, because there is more of this freedom in Australia than there is in many, many other countries, because they are confined by doctrine, by, I mean, South Africa, for instance, for 70 years was dictated to by Calvinists. It tends to be a bit stained. I got here, geez, things were loose. There was a buzz, you know, and lots more women. Women in South Africa, they were closet alkies because of the stigma. Oh. They had all these women around the country hitting it in their pantry and coming out and trying to cook the food and that sort of thing. All under the carpet. I mentioned dignity. As I say, I'm now befriendable. I'm not an arsehole anymore in the sense of being an arrogant, obstreperous alky. I make friends. I am a good friend. I'm a loyal friend, particularly to my friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. I must tell you something that I come to Oz. And, geez, I started hearing about this official policy towards alcoholism and drug addiction. Not that that's our area, but alcoholism. It's called harm minimization. And I'm sitting there shaking my head and thinking, harm minimization? How can that be a bloody policy? So I sign up for a course in alcohol and other drugs with a taxi in Sydney, and I do it long distance, and it's all there. I've got to become knowledgeable about harm minimization. And to me, this is the business of dealing with another alkie, you know? You're going to come in, and you're going to say to him, listen, mate, I want to tell you about harm minimization, which is the policy of our country. What we're going to do is we're going to teach you how to drink in a way that causes less harm. And that's called harm minimization. In other words, you will die from it, of course, like we all would, but we're going to try and make it gentler. That's political correctness. Gone mad. It's gone mad. People like us, there can only be one philosophy for us, and that is abstinence. It's been proven now, it's unquestionable, it's abstinence. But the politically correct, of course, have gotten in on this act as well. And I saw a lovely definition of political correctness now in going through the internet. It says political correctness is the absurd proposition that you can pick up a piece of shit from the clean end. Think about it. And that's this philosophy. And that's why I am married. I am steeped in I went for I could help in a workshop up Gimpiwa for all schools in terms of mentoring and that. That's what I do in some of my spare time. I mentor troubled boys, hoping, you know, you might do something to stop them from becoming members. Terrible, but there it is. And I said to these people, they were talking about harm minimization and that's in the classroom and all the rest of it. I said, hang on a second. I said, this is not for me. I said, because I'm steeped in the philosophy of abstinence. Alcoholics Anonymous philosophy. If you're an alcoholic, look, there are millions of people who in their younger years went what we would call pingers, off the rails, you know, became real hellions, and then saw the error of their way, came right, and went on to live fruitful and lovely lives. And that's fantastic. I wish I'd been one of them. But then I wouldn't have met all you guys, so hang on a sec, no. But those of us who end up needing AA, who end up stumbling in here, no. There's no harm minimization, man. It's abstinence. The only way we have to stop drinking. That's why you hear these old guys when they talk and they say, keep coming back. How long have I been talking, Chris?
Just about ready to wind up, man.
Keep coming back. Meetings. One of the guys outside was saying to me earlier, geez, you can't believe how good life is now that there's a few years sober. I said, man, you haven't seen nothing yet. The longer you're sober, the better it gets. You've got to talk to any veteran in AA. And we've got guys from all over the world here. Go and talk to all of them. The longer you're in AA, the better it gets. And those of us who've been here for donkey's bloody years can attest to this. I'm still enjoying it. I still wake up in the morning and think to myself, you lucky bastard. You lucky bastard. Look at you. And that's what I wish on everybody in AA. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gary.